This is Sunday Extra on ABC Radio National, and our next guest is an Uber driver in Virginia, about 30 minutes outside of Washington, D.C. But for 28 years until 2024, he was a journalist and foreign correspondent, and he rose to become the Canada Bureau Chief for Reuters. But when Steve Scheer was laid off from that job, he experienced the sort of dislocation and precariousness in his life that he'd previously reported on in the lives of others. Steve wrote about this career upheaval in a compelling Substack essay called My Journey from Foreign Correspondent to Uber Driver in Trump's America. And I'm very pleased to say that Steve joins us now. Steve, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Steve, if you'd told us the story of your career in, say, mid-2019, what did it sound like then?
Well, it was a good career. I'd done very well. I'd started off as a foreign correspondent in Italy. I spoke Italian, so I had been living in Romania. I moved to Italy. I looked for a job as a journalist, and I found one pretty much immediately. Different times in 1998 compared to now. And I started working in Rome at the end of 1998, and I stayed there for 21 years. As a journalist, as a foreign correspondent, I worked mainly for Bloomberg and Reuters. And then Reuters in 2019 promoted me to be bureau chief in Ottawa. And so I moved my family, three kids and my wife, to Ottawa. And we lived there for 6 years, five of which I was employed still with Reuters. And then the last year, I was kind of unwinding everything and looking for work.
Yeah, so what happened?
I was laid off amid budget cuts. I'd seen it happen to lots of my colleagues over the years. You know, the emails would come in usually pretty consistently. Sometimes you'd get, you know, 10 in one day when there was a round of cuts. But, you know, the downsizing of the newsrooms has been going on for quite a while. Newspapers have been disappearing. And I had seen it before, but I'd never, you know, had it happen to me.
There are two central aspects, I think, of the predicament that you describe when all this happened to you. First, the vagaries of being a migrant, as you and your family were in Canada, and then the job market you found back in America. Could you speak about that first aspect, the ramifications of your migration status when Reuters let you go?
My job gave me a work permit to allow me to work in Canada. When I was there, I did all I could actually to get permanent residency, which is kind of the equivalent of a green card in the United States. It means essentially you can work there wherever you want. It gives you complete freedom to work as long as you're, you know, living in Canada. So I'd signed up to do that, but wasn't able to obtain it before I was laid off. And then when I was laid off, I lost points. It's a point system. And so essentially I was never able to get permanent residency. And that meant that as soon as I was laid off, I lost all my health insurance because Canada has state health care, but for some reason they don't cover you if you lose your job. I find that very strange. Obviously, that's for non-Canadians and non-permanent residents. But still, you know, you would think that a safety net would be there for the people that need it, not for the ones that don't. So I lost my health insurance and really my right to live and work in Canada. I mean, I was still allowed to stay for a while, but I couldn't work legally. And so that was really hard. I mean, I looked for sponsorships, you know, I looked for jobs that, you know, that would give me a sponsorship, but that didn't work out. And so eventually I realized, you know, I was going to have to leave Canada. So I was kind of really forced to leave the country that, I didn't know if I was going to stay my whole life, but I certainly wanted my kids to finish high school there. And that wasn't possible. So, you know, I kind of had to leave there, sell my house, you know, fix it up, sell it, and kind of prepare my kids to leave, you know, and so I let them finish the school year. And that's kind of when we packed everything up and left. And that was beginning of July, 2025.
And what resonances did that experience have with stories you've covered previously as a foreign correspondent?
I mentioned this in the essay. I covered the deadliest migration route in the world for about 5 years. And that was across the sea from Libya to Italy, usually, or it could be Malta, but mostly to Italy. And I covered that for a long time. It started with a terrible shipwreck in 2013. At the end of 2013, 360 people died, including several children. I flew down to Lampedusa. Reuters sent me on assignment. And then I stayed on that assignment for a number of years, going out on rescue ships off the coast of Libya, documenting sort of the stories that they would tell about Libya once they got to safety. At the time, you know, I tried to cover it as well as I could as a journalist. I told their stories, which were horrible, especially the ones about Libya, you know, where they were treated really, really badly. But I still had a hard time understanding, even though I knew how bad Libya was, the fact that they would get on these boats that were really lethal. I mean, they were not safe. And hundreds of people would get on them, including, you know, with their children. And I just had a hard time understanding why they would risk so much. But I've started to understand it better. Now, again, you know, I didn't have to get on a dangerous boat and come to the United States. Plus, you know, when I got here, I was an American citizen, so that was pretty easy. But, you know, I did have to leave a country that I didn't want to leave because I had to find work elsewhere. And I had to basically evacuate my children to another country. And so I started to understand how it feels to be backed in a corner economically. And because of your documents or, you know, because you can't live in a certain place or something like that.
We're speaking with Steve Scheer, author of the Substack essay, My Journey from Foreign Correspondent to Uber Driver in Trump's America. Steve, tell us about what you found in the American job market for someone in your situation and how you dealt with that.
It was 1997 when I left the United States. I was 27 years old and Bill Clinton was in office. It just seemed like a different place to me then. Granted, you know, I was younger, but I had a dream and the United States allowed me to pursue it. Now, my dream was outside of the United States, but I got a good education. I learned how to live and, you know, make money and sort of take care of myself. And I was able to pursue my dream. When I came back this time, it didn't feel, you know, like such a place of opportunity. And it hasn't been, you know, de facto, very, very much. I haven't found very much opportunity since I've come back. It's a darker place, too. I think there's a real lack of decency in government, lack of a moral compass by leadership, and even, you know, I guess a lot of voters, right? So a lot of citizens. And, you know, it's very uncomfortable, I think, to me, you know, having covered immigration and so on, to see what's going on here with ICE rounding up people who are really just trying to make a better life for themselves. And while they're doing that, they're serving everybody else in the service economy. They're the people that, you know, give us breakfast, that take care of us when we're sick, who fix our cars, who drive us around when we have to get somewhere. And I became part of that, you know, and so I started to understand that a lot better. I also think that there's an economic bankruptcy, you know, there's a moral and economic bankruptcy right now in the United States. And the economic one, you know, granted, it's still a powerful economy, but there's a growing number of people that are sinking to the bottom of that are the low income, service oriented people, the people who provide the services to all of us, really. And that is getting bigger. It just doesn't feel like a place of hope, of economic hope, like it did once upon a time.
As an Uber driver, what have you noticed about your customers?
Well, what I noticed was that most of them are really just, you know, low-income people trying to get to work. They're service workers. And school teachers, like, you know, the first three people I picked up are school teachers, you know, at elementary schools. The vast majority of the people I drive around are not, you know, white Americans like me. They're brown, they're black, they're South Asian. A lot of them don't even speak English very well. You know, they speak Spanish usually. They just need to get to work or, you know, to work or from work in an area that doesn't have great public transportation. And so that's what Uber does. I feel like I'm one of them, I guess, you know, in a lot of ways. It's a very different experience from being, you know, kind of an international journalist. When you drive an Uber, nobody really pays attention to you. You're basically invisible. You know, you're just a driver. But when you're a journalist, you could be in front of the camera, you know, people have to recognize your name when you call up the prime minister's office or the central bank, and you are recognized, you have a status, and I don't have that anymore. And it doesn't really, that's not, I don't think, the bothersome part, but it has been very revealing to me to feel that, you know, to be that invisible person after having spent a career doing something completely different.
Steve, it seems from the distance of Australia that this essay has struck a bit of a chord. What's the impact of publishing it been for you?
I think the most surprising thing to me is how many people have reached out, you know, who are going through something similar or who have gone through something similar. A lot of them are journalists like me who, you know, sort of fell out of journalism because they got laid off and they couldn't get back in. And so they had to reinvent themselves in some way. But not all of them are. Some are, you know, professionals from other fields. Some are people who are struggling with immigration issues like I did. I think what I discovered was just how many people are out there struggling right now. And I think that's the nerve that I touched. And I think that's why so many people reacted. Because there's just a lot more people out there. And I think it happens at a certain age as well, right? I'm in my 50s. And it's hard to reinvent yourself when you're in your 50s. You know, it's easy when you're 25 or 30, but it's a lot harder in your 50s. And I've heard from so many people really in that situation. And I was surprised. You know, I've known other people who have lost their, you know, their jobs in journalism and so on. And I'm sad to say that I probably didn't check in with them as, you know, as much as I should have to find out, you know, what they were going through. I really didn't know how difficult it was until it happened to me. And I don't think a lot of people really understand that. And so I hope that, you know, in some way I'm giving voice to people who haven't, you know, written their stories, who haven't been able to communicate, perhaps, you know, the situation they've been in. And so when they read what I wrote, maybe it helps a little bit just to hear that from somebody else.
You mentioned you've got teenage kids. You were the primary breadwinner in your family. Could you speak a little about how what's happened to you has impacted on them and how they're going now?
There's no way that it couldn't impact them because we had to leave Canada. We'd been there 6 years. They had friends. They were going to a high school. They're all three in high school. So I had to pull them away from all that. You know, I had to pull them away from what they had known, you know, for the past 6 years. And they went to Italy then for about 6 months. They were born in Rome and my wife's Italian. So they went to school in Italy for 6 months. And then they were the ones actually who wanted to come back because the school systems are very different between Italy and North America. And so they wanted to get back in a system that was more similar to what they were used to. They didn't really like the schools in Italy. Even though they speak Italian, it was still harder for them. Even though I didn't really have a job yet, I managed to secure an apartment and I brought them back here before Christmas. And now they're here and they've started high school here. They've been there for about 3 weeks now. And it's been going well, you know, it's still early in the game. They're still trying to make friends and get used to the school and all that. But, you know, it has been, you know, it's hard, you know, when you know your children are watching you and you're struggling. But, you know, kids are resilient. I feel like, you know, what's important is that we're together and I'm supporting them and they're back in school and we're building a life again, just like we did when we moved to Ottawa.
I understand also that your wife's had to go back to work in Italy. Is the situation with ICE in America that you described earlier, is that a factor in terms of whether or not she'll be able to come back to America and work there as well?
It is a factor. I mean, she is, I think, justifiably somewhat afraid of living here now. And there have been cases, and it's been documented, of spouses being deported when they go to a normal meeting, you know, to get a green card, you know, which is perfectly normal. People have been doing it for decades. They just come in and take the spouse that's not American and they deport them. You know, it's crazy. You know, things like that are happening here. And so that frightens her. I think there are other issues, you know, just, you know, she does speak with a strong accent in English, you know, so she would be, you know, recognized as a foreigner if anybody spoke to her. And so I think that creates a bit of fear as well, even though, you know, I don't see ICE people wandering around our neighborhood. I mean, they've definitely targeted, you know, Democratic cities like Minneapolis, but it's still, I think, a worry for her. And, you know, there's just a lot of bureaucracy you have to do. And as part of that bureaucracy, you can't leave, you know, like if you apply for a green card, you have to stay in the country for a certain amount of time and you don't know how long that is. And I think that feels also quite constraining to her. She's working in Italy and then, you know, coming back and forth, but you know, she has a tourist visa right now and she can only stay 3 months total per year. You know, we want to get one that lasts 6 months. Let's just say the immigration bureaucracy for the United States right now is really gummed up and unusual and unpredictable. And it's just not a great moment if you want to come to the United States and you're not American.
Steve, thank you so much for speaking so generously about this predicament that you and your family have found yourselves in. Just one final question. You wrote this essay on Substack, which is a platform designed for creatives to self-publish, but also to monetize. Do you wish you'd done that before this essay took off?
Well, I did turn it on after I published it. And it has been, surprisingly, helpful. I feel a certain sense of responsibility to publish if I turn it on. And before, I was using it more to find my voice because I'd written for 30 years with objectivity, or at least I tried to, because that was my job. I told other people's stories, not my own. And I had to try and tell them in an objective way. That was the way I learned how to do journalism. And now I've been trying to find my own voice. And so for me, Substack was more of a place where I could exercise that, where I could try it out. So I didn't expect to ever make any money off of it at all. Now I'm making a little bit, and that's really great, to have written something that people are willing to pay for and pay me for instead of Bloomberg or Reuters. So that feels great, but I had no expectations that it would happen, I guess.
Steve Scheer, thanks so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
And Steve's essay is called My Journey from Foreign Correspondent to Uber Driver in Trump's America. And his Substack is called Navigating the Drift.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.